change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podsky Movie. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, do you know what today is?
Well, I believe it's August 15th.
Oh, jeez. It's episode 150.
Oh, yes, yes. Massive.
How?
Massive deal.
How? You know, like, not ironic, but like, what synchronicity is it of us that our 150th episode would coincide with the 150th season of Football in Hamilton? Like, it's almost like it was meant to be. All those times that we had to miss episodes because of commitments one way or the other, the times we decided, hey, we're going to do only a couple this month, like in the off season instead of, you know what I mean? Like, everything, every decision we've made the past 5 years got us to episode 150 smack dab in the middle of season 150. It's like it was meant to be.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, you know, I'm pretty proud to do a podcast of the greatest franchise in CFL history. So, yeah, it's been a good 150 episodes. I'm looking forward to the next 150.
Oh, God, I'm 150 more. I'm going to be an old, old man by then.
Well, let's do the math. I mean, we've been 2015. It's only been 4 years. You won't be that old.
I'll be in my 40s, dude.
God, yeah, that's
old.
I'll be very close to my 40s as well, so don't worry. I'll be there, right there with you, bud.
So in celebration of our 150th episode, we're going to talk about the 150 things that we think are great about the show, right? Like, that's how we're going to spend the next 7 hours on this podcast, just talking about all things about how we're great. 150 things each, right? So 300 total things.
I don't think we could get to 300 things that are great about this show, Josh. We might tap out at like two. Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. But you know what we can talk about that's great? And that is us getting to do a show after another Ticats win. Mike, I think
Ow.
I...
Sorry.
What was that?
My cat bit me.
Oh, this is perfect. What have I been... On social media, I've been going at you about having this stupid cat, and in the middle of a show, in the middle of what was going to be an eloquent... Oh, see? I even screwed that up. Eloquent soliloquy. Your stupid cat bites you. This is why cats are terrible, Mike.
He's just playing. Come on, cut him some slack.
Okay, so next time we hang out, if I bite you, I can use gongs and play.
No, it's different. It's different. I think you're half human at least.
I'm a human man. Jeez.
Yeah.
We're less than 3 minutes into the show and it's already gone off the rails. Okay, let's talk about, I don't even remember how we were segueing this. Anyway, 6-2, our Ticats sit at, Mike. Would you have thought this at the beginning of the season? I mean, you're Mr. Pessimism. You think this team's still going 9-9, so they got to go, what, 3-7 the rest of the way? Is that going to happen?
No, I don't think so. I think this team's going to be over 500. And, you know, at the start of the season, you look at the team, and obviously they have the talent, they have the coaching staff to make it to an over 500 record. I had all the confidence in the world that they have the talent to do it. You know, it's just the Ticats, and I figured something would go wrong, like a Jeremiah Mazzoli injury. But that hasn't seemed to really slow down this team. So, yeah, we're sitting at 6-2, and, you know, the game's coming up. I think we're going to be sitting at maybe 7-2, 8-2 before Labor Day comes.
Yeah, pretty exciting. So in this one, the Ticats went down very much so in the fourth quarter. What was it, 34-19, I think, before they made the furious comeback and score 16 unanswered points in the final 10 minutes of the game and win it 35-34. So I did not get to watch the game live. I was sitting at the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto with my brother, my nephew, and my best friend watching NXT TakeOver, which, side note, was super awesome. If you haven't a chance to see it and are a wrestling fan, what are you doing? Go watch it. I watch it the next morning, and I'm watching this thing kind of like, oh, okay, this is going good, and then it's not going so good, and then, oh, my God, they're going to lose to the one-win BC Lions. This is terrible. And then they kick a field goal, and then they score a touchdown, and then they score another. It's like, oh my, they actually won this game. At what point, Mike, did you think the game was over and this was a loss? And then how elated were you when they won and you were wrong?
Well, I thought it was pretty much over when they went up by 15 in the fourth. You know, the tie got started out really strong, and then they kind of, you know, the offense kind of went a little stagnant. I didn't think they'd have the, you know, with that new quarterback, Dane Evans, I didn't think he'd have the experience to make the comeback, but I was completely wrong. Brandon Banks obviously was a big part of it as well. You know, I like that Brandon Banks almost had that touchdown catch in the end zone. It was a tough catch, but he could have caught it. And then on the next play, you know, he gets that big touchdown right near the side of the field and sneaks into the end zone. So yeah, it was, I thought it was over. And then when they came back, it was pretty damn exciting.
Yeah. I guess your pessimism last week, your worry was kind of rewarded in a way with such a close win. I remember when we were talking last week, and I think the books had to spread it like 13.5. And I said, there's no, like, even if this is a blowout, the Ticats will win by at most 10 points. So, you know, the 1-point win was probably closer than a lot of people would have anticipated based on these two teams' records. But, and this is not to make excuses, the Ticats are dealing with a number of injuries. Obviously, the biggest one is to Jeremiah Mazzoli. But in this game, they dealt with some injuries there. Delvin Bro did not play against BC. This team is finding ways to win. And I saw an interesting quote. I think it was from Simone Lawrence after the game, where he said, like, how many times in the past are these the types of games the Ticats would lose? Like, they'd go down and they just would not be able to get themselves up off the mat. We're seeing this team win in multiple ways. You know what I mean? And it's obviously we're going to talk about special teams in this one. And we've talked about the defense in the past. And there's been games where the offense has exploded. But it seems like every week they're finding these ways to win. And it reminds me of, pardon me, reminds me of a lot of ways of Calgary. And how they're never quite out of it, no matter what. And they're at the end of the game, you're just like, man, Stamps won again. And I know that you lament that, and I've seen you take some shots at them and how boring they are. And I get all that. But at the same time, it's like, it's nice for us to have a team that, like, finds these almost improbable ways of pulling things off, no?
Yeah, it's a joy to watch. And I think it is a little bit different than Calgary, because this game was damn exciting. Like, obviously, there were some lulls. The Ticats didn't score any points in the third quarter. But you always had those big special teams returns that make it exciting, and all the trickery on offense. You know, this is a very fun team to watch. And you're right, they are just finding ways to win. And it's a sign of a very good team.
And it's crazy when you look at, like, the total numbers in this one. You look, BC led in net offense. BC had the ball for almost 14 minutes more than the Ticats, like, actually over 14 minutes. I'm sorry, my math sometimes it fails me. Mike Riley played tremendous. I thought BC's offensive line really kept him up until late in the game when, a couple high snaps and obviously the one where Riley gets nicked up. But I thought BC played a well of a football game in this. And if you look at every metric other than the scoreboard, like, the Lions really played extremely well in this. So for the Ticats to even, like, records be damned, for the Ticats to have to get in sort of this dogfight here, or I guess cat fight, if you will, with the Lions, and to come out on top, I think it really shows what this team is made of. And I think it shows what this team can be once things start clicking in all aspects of the game. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like you said, the offense kind of went into a funk. Like, I think I've read somewhere, I think it's in these notes, like, the Lions had the ball for like over 12 minutes in the third quarter. Like, that's why you don't score any points if you don't have the ball. Yeah, the Lions had the ball for 12 minutes and 20 seconds in the third quarter. Ticats had it for 2 minutes and 40. Like,
yeah,
that's domination.
They had that long drive, the start of the second half, mm-hmm. I believe. It was like close to 7 minutes or so. Yeah. And they were just running the ball down the Ticats' throat, moving the ball really well. So, yeah, I agree that BC probably played probably played their best game. I know they've won one game, but I think that they really played well in this one. It shows the parity of the league right now as well. Like a 1-6 team or 1-7 team can go up against a team that is now 6-2 and, you know, only lose by 1 point. I think that BC or even Toronto can win any game that they're in. So I think it's a good thing for the CFL.
Yeah, and not to take anything away from the BC Lions in this one, I think, like you said, they played their best game of the year so far. But one of the big stories from this game, Ticats-wise, is the amount of penalties that they took. Oh. 14 total flags, Mike, for 109 yards. And there was one BC drive that ended with, I believe it was a Mike Riley touchdown plunge. Ticats were flagged 6 times, and like 3 of those were like for pass interference or illegal contact. And it was like, it was Al Bradbury's crew. And look, I don't ever like to harp on the officials. Sometimes, though, you just have to. And this, to me, might have been one of the worst officiated games I've seen in quite some time. Maybe the worst so far this season. At least the worst Ticats officiated game I've seen this season. It's the flags. Most of them, to be fair, were probably deserved. Some of them, there were some. The one on the Frankie Williams punt return that called back a touchdown seemed ticky-tacky. They missed a couple, like one on Frankie Williams' punt return. But like for the most part, I thought this game was just kind of a slog in how often the referees were throwing flags. It just sometimes you got to let guys play, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's that one drive. I couldn't believe pass interference, illegal contact, pass interference. I left. I went to the bathroom, came back, and they were calling pass interference again. I was like, what is this, a replay? Like, what's going on here? It was ridiculous. And yeah, it's always tough to watch those games where there's penalty after penalty after penalty. I can't stand it. And it's usually Al Bradbury's crew. They seem to, you know, either call everything or miss egregious ones. So it's pretty disappointing.
What wasn't disappointing, Mike, is where we're going to start off with. We're going to talk Dane Evans, 23 of 32, 260 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 sweet kip-up, which if anyone at the CFL League offices is listening, that was a Shawn Michaels kip-up, not a Dwayne The Rock Johnson one. The Rock used his hands when he did his. Shawn Michaels did it with no hand. Come on, guys. If you're going to do wrestling references, get it right. But anyway, I thought Dane Evans played his best game so far. This was his third start, obviously, second in a row after Mazzoli went down. I thought this was his best game so far as a pro. No interceptions, which I think is the big one. Didn't take a sack. He rolled out of the pocket when he had to. He found open guys. He started to develop some chemistry with his receivers, Brandon Banks in particular, and we'll talk about him in a second. I just thought that this was just a really solid performance from Dane Evans and kind of showed you why the team has so much faith in him.
Yeah, I thought he was great. 22 of 32, 71.9 completion percentage, 260 yards, 2 touchdowns, and as you mentioned, no interception, which is huge for a young quarterback like Dane. This is the potential that this team has seen in him, and it really showed in this game. He, you know, obviously Brandon Banks was a huge get, you know, getting him back in the lineup. He had a monster game, and then after that, it kind of drops off. Jalen Acklin was the second leading receiver. When you look at the numbers, Brandon Banks had 137 yards, and then Acklin second behind him with only 53. So obviously, Brandon Banks is a huge, huge part of this offense, and he showed it again today. Yeah, in the last game, not today.
If he showed it today, that means they won another game, even though we're recording on a Thursday. Anyway, you mentioned Brandon Banks. Let's go right into him. You mentioned the 137, 9 catches to get those 137, 2 touchdowns, 1 2-point convert. Mike, I'm going to make this statement right now. I've made it before. I said he's the best player in the CFL. I'm going to say this now. He, at this point in the season, is MOP, hands down, and it's not even close. He's runaway MOP for me at this point in the season. Are you going to take my side here, or are you going to throw me to the Wolves?
No, I got to agree with you there. At one point, maybe Trevor Harris was in contention because he had, you know, 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, but he's fallen off the radar in recent weeks. So, yeah, I'm totally with you. Brandon Banks is just, you know, he's the most outstanding player, and I'd argue he's the most valuable player as well. Yep. Because he's just so, so valuable to this team, to this offense. Yeah, Brandon Banks, MOP for sure.
Yeah, look at the difference in the offense between this week's game against BC and the week before against Saskatchewan. I don't want to say that, oh, if Brandon Banks plays that game, the Ticats win, but I mean, chances are if Brandon Banks plays that game, the Ticats win. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Brandon Banks he's something else. And it seems like, I don't know if you saw the piece on TSN. It was a short little piece on SportsCenter where he sat down with Tommy Condell and wondered, like, what's my role in this offense? And Tommy Condell told him, you are an important piece of this offense. He was worried with the change of philosophy and with June Jones gone that he might be an afterthought. He's first in catches, first in yards, second in touchdowns, first in targets. Like, he's at the top or near the top of, like, basically every significant receiving category. He's not only an afterthought, he's the straw that stirs this drink. And, yeah, I completely agree with you. MOP and definitely MVP, without a doubt.
Yeah, he's the man in this offense, especially since, you know, Sean Thomas Erlington has gone down. We've seen less in the run game and more in the pass game. And, you know, Brandon Banks is going to benefit from that. He's probably going to lead the league in receiving this year. And, you know, I'm just excited to see what he can do the rest of the season because he's the number one target. You look at the numbers and it's not even close. I mean, a guy like Luke Tasker, which is unfortunate, only had one reception for 4 yards in this game, or one reception for 3 yards. Sorry. So, yeah, I think that Brandon Banks is the number one guy, but I would also like to see other receivers get involved a little bit more. And I'm sure we will as the games go along.
Yeah, and we got to remember, this isn't Jeremiah Mazzoli anymore. It is Dane Evans. And, I mean, feeding Brandon Banks ball is never a bad idea.
No. If you got to lean on him, lean on him.
Yeah, and it's paying off. And I think the only thing that really derails his season is injury. And, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and, he's been playing injured. So, yeah, we just got to hope that, nothing happens to that shoulder of his.
What was interesting in this one, too, Mike, was the amount of, like, trick plays, gadget plays that the team ran.
Yes.
Braylon Addison saw some wildcat time. He saw a bunch of runs. I think he was the second leading rusher on the team. We had Luke Tasker throwing a near touchdown pass to Dane Evans. We had a beautifully executed onside punt, which made me grin. Man, I had missed those when Jeff Reinbold wasn't here. You know what I mean? Like, to see those types of things, oh, gives me goosebumps. And then we had the quote-unquote Music City Miracle type kickoff or punt return. It's really interesting to see that they're throwing everything out there. They're not holding back in any sort of way. They're not keeping anything stashed. They're really doing everything they can to kind of make this offense and in some cases the special teams kind of hum. I really find it quite interesting and intriguing to watch.
Yeah, I remember that first time in the game they ran that package where, you know, it's kind of a wildcat where Braylon Addison gets the ball. They did like a reverse thing where the receivers were running two ways and I had no idea who had the ball.
Oh, same honestly. Here.
And Braylon Addison went right up the middle. And, you know, it wasn't a huge game, but it was enough for a first down. And I thought it was just beautifully executed. I like that package a lot. I think with Jeremiah Mazzoli going down, you know, they thought maybe we're gonna get some trickery in this playbook. And it's been working so far, you know, in the offense and the special teams. So, you know, keep it up. I love it.
Yeah, and we can't forget, Braylon Addison was at one point a quarterback. He was a high school quarterback. I believe he even went to Oregon, and like his freshman year there was still a quarterback before they converted him to receiver. So he does have some experience playing quarterback, not at the professional level, obviously, but, I mean, you don't forget how to throw a football, and you don't get recruited as a quarterback to a major NCAA school without having the abilities to play quarterback. So I think this is a nice, interesting wrinkle. The onside punt, though, Mike, how giddy did that make you?
It's tremendous to see. It's, you know, we all know that Reinbold has a lot of tricks up his sleeves, and it's showing early on in the season. You know, his last couple years with the Austin regime weren't filled with a ton of trick plays, maybe because people were expecting it more. But, you know, he's been throwing them out there, and they've been working a lot this year. So it's very cool to see.
So we got to talk about the run game, Mike. You got your wish a little bit. We saw an American in the backfield in Cam Marshall. 7 for 40, not terrible numbers, to be honest. You didn't see the ball that much. Braylon Addison did have 5 carries for 38 yards. So you kind of combine those two, 12 carries, 78 yards. That's not terrible. But it really feels to me, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this, that in the absence of Sean Thomas Erlington, that the team is just not as comfortable running the football as they were when he was in the lineup. Do you get that feeling too, or do you think that maybe we just need to give Marshall a couple more weeks and then he'll truly get settled?
Well, I feel that way. I think Sean Thomas Erlington was having a tremendous season. I mean, he still leads the team in rushing yards, so that'll tell you something. Yeah, I think that especially when they had the rookies in there, you know, guys like Malik Irons, they didn't have as much confidence. I think that I like what I saw from Cam Marshall. You know, he didn't have a ton of touches. The first time he touched the ball, I was pretty excited because he's a brooding running back, and he went right up the middle, got a first down. I think that they're going to maybe as the weeks go along, they'll get more confidence in him, and I think he will be a productive running back there. And, he's not going to be as flashy as Sean Thomas Erlington. He might not put up the yards that he did when he was in there, but I think he can be a very productive guy back in the Ticats backfield because, you know, he's been around this league for a bit and he's a good running back.
Yeah, I do think he's a good running back. I just wonder if maybe the explosive plays, the big plays that we've seen from the running game with Sean Thomas Erlington, we saw a little bit with Malik Irons and some with Anthony Coombs as well. I just wonder if that part of the game plan is going to be gone. Cam Marshall is not a home run threat. He is a bruiser. Like you said, he took one right up the middle for a first down on his first carry. I wonder if he's a guy that's going to need, 12, 13, 14, 15 carries to really make it look like he had an impact on the game. And I just don't know if the Ticats are built for that. Now, they did in this game. If you erase sort of the David Watford one-yard plunge, they only ran the ball, 16 times in this game. And it's not a whole heck of a lot compared to 32 passes. And, I mean, that's, I guess, maybe par for the course with the Ticats. But I think if we're going to see Marshall truly be able to affect this offense in a positive light, I think he's going to need to get the ball more. But I just don't know if the Ticats are going to do that.
Yeah, it might be a situation like this game where, Cam Marshall gets, 7 carries or 7 to 10 carries, and then they hand the ball off to other players in the offense, such as – Braylon Addison, I could see some handoffs to Brandon Banks. I could see them bringing in Coombs and maybe giving him some handoffs. So maybe it's going to be a running back by committee type deal and not just Cam Marshall, running 15 to 20 times a game.
So the last part of the offense that I want to touch on tonight, Mike, the offensive line, they gave up no sacks, which is tremendous. I think every week that's what we hope for. We got that this week, but I think what even makes that more tremendous, if I can reuse the word, is they did it for most of the game without Riker Matthews. He was injured, and then the Ticats had to shuffle their offensive line around, and they went the rest of the game with an entirely Canadian offensive line. Kay Okafor, who started the game at guard, kicked out to left tackle, and rookie Jesse Gibbon, a fellow Sherwood alum, slid in at guard, and Did you really notice a difference? If they didn't mention on the broadcast that Riker Matthews was out, would you have even known? I didn't.
No, I wouldn't have known. They played a tremendous game. I mean, it just shows the depth, especially the Canadian depth, of this offensive line. Players like Riker Matthews, who is one of the best linemen in the league for my money, can go down and you don't see a difference. That is a big thumbs up to the depth on this team.
Odell Willis, did you even hear his name?
Nope.
Completely silent. Is he even on the stat sheet? I didn't even look, but he had 2 tackles, 1 on defense and 1 on special teams, and that was it. Like, lining up against Okafor, which I believe is where he would have lined up most of the night after Matthews got hurt, for him to be completely negated. Like you said, that speaks to the depth and talent that this team has. Kay Okafor is not a household name, not even a guy that anyone outside of Hamilton probably knows. Handled Odell Willis, future Hall of Famer, with kind of plenty of ease, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a big change from a couple of years ago when an offensive lineman went down and then you'd have to plug in a rookie who wasn't ready at all, and you could see the difference on the O-line. You could see the pressure coming, the sacks, all that. But now they've done a great job to really make this offensive line strong, even when the starters go down.
All right, let's move to the defensive side, Mike. And when the team gives up 34 points, it's not really a banner day for the defense. I think the biggest thing that stood out to me, there were two, but the first one we'll talk about. The run D in this one was, once again, very porous. A week ago against Saskatchewan, they held William Powell to 51 yards, I think it was, which, you know, that's a great showing. And then this week, John White comes in, who's a tremendous back in his own right, and rips off 124 yards on 15 carries and two touchdowns. And John White's always kind of played well against the Ticats, and that's one of the reasons why I was so happy that he was here last year. This is definitely White's best game so far of the 2019 season. But, man, it's really worrisome when week after week we don't know what we're going to get from the run D. And this week it was a poor performance, to put things mildly.
Yeah, it's strange how they can go from very, very good to very, very bad week to week in the run defense. And, yeah, John White looked like his old self, didn't he, out there? He really put a game together against the Ticats. You know, 8.3-yard average, that's ridiculous. And two touchdowns. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we have the talent to stop the run, but I don't know if it's maybe scheme. I'm not sure, but every couple of weeks it seems the running back really burns this defense.
Yeah, that's where I'm, is it personnel? Is it?
I don't think it is, because, you know, that defensive line, with those guys in the middle, you'd think they'd be stuffing the run, and the linebackers are great on this team. So I don't know, maybe it is the scheme, but then you think, well, if they can hold William Powell to only 50 yards, and maybe I don't, it's very confusing, Josh. It's very confusing.
Yeah, it's kind of the one aspect of this team that's been the most flummoxing. I think any offensive struggles we kind of understand now is due to, you know, Dane Evans being in their quarterback and not Jeremiah Mazzoli, and like injuries have hurt in some areas, but this run D, like week in, week out, you just, you know, you never know what you're going to get. One week it's 51 yards to William Powell. The next week it's, you know, nearly 130 to John White. It's pretty crazy. What else was crazy, Mike? Brian Burnham is becoming a Ticat killer. This guy had probably his best game of the year. 7 catches, 149 yards, 2 TDs. Beat up on Richard Leonard pretty much all night. Richard Leonard had a bit of a rough go in this one. A week after we named him our Podkey Player of the Week, but I mean, Brian Burnham's a tremendous player, but man, he's starting to turn into that like SJ Green, Weston Dressler type player who just every time he plays the Cats goes off for a big game. He was a guy last year that had the touchdown in BC and the 2-point convert to tie the game that sent it to overtime, if you don't recall.
Yeah, I do recall. That was you know, he always makes these spectacular catches against the Ticats. I mean, he got the 1 foot in that game in the end zone, and then he had that catch in Hamilton, which was ridiculous.
A couple of years ago.
And then this game, you know, he has the catch where he sticks his feet in again near the end zone. You know, he had 7 receptions for 149 yards, 2 touchdowns. Yeah, he is. I tweeted out in the Podsky account, he's becoming a Ticat killer. And I mean, I have a lot of respect for Brian Burnham. I thought that he's been one of the best receivers in the league for you know, 3 or 4 years now. He's just, yeah, every time he plays the Ticats, he's putting up massive numbers. He's one of the best in the league.
Yeah, and poor Richard Leonard was unfortunately on the receiving end of that. Not a banner night for our reigning Podsky Player of the Week.
No, not a great night. You know, he had I think he had 7 tackles, which shows that you know players were catching the ball around him. So he did have 1 interception, but other than that, yeah, he was torched by Brian Burnham all night long, and hopefully this week he bounces back.
Yeah, and that interception was kind of the game-sealing interception. Came off of a tip pass by Simone Lawrence. And Simone Lawrence, man, I thought he had a whale of a game in his return from suspension. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally have to agree with you. You know, you talk about that tip. The BC Lions were driving, and they were in field goal range almost, and that was a huge play by him. He led the team in tackles with 8. He had 1 quarterback sack, which was it the high snap?
And he was chasing the one that Riley got hurt on?
No, that wasn't him.
That was Jarrett Davis.
Yeah, Jarrett Davis. So he had the 1 quarterback sack, led the team in tackles. Just a tremendous return for him to the lineup.
Can we talk about Jarrett Davis too? 5 tackles, 2 sacks, like Man, how good is this guy?
He's one of the best in the league. He just came in, and there was very high expectations for him, and he has not disappointed one bit this year at all. It's he's great. He's great, man.
Yeah, really. It's talking about him defensively is like talking about Brandon Banks on offense. It's like we're only 8 games in the season. We're kind of running out of things to say about them because they're just like it's almost like they do these things. And it's like, well, yeah, like that's what we expected.
Yeah, and it's not just quarterback sacks. I mean, he had 5 defensive tackles. I don't know where he's sitting in the quarterback sack race right now, but he's got to be up there. I know that Charlton Hughes is leading the league, but you think about the best defensive lineman in the league, especially the outside, defensive lineman, and Jaguar Davis is in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, he's tied for second with Cordero Law with 6.
Yeah, he's. I think that's 4 behind the lead, right?
Yeah, so, Hughes is having a great start to the season. But Hughes had that great start to the season last year, too. And then second half of the year, he like kind of tailed off. I don't know. Davis seems like the guy that's kind of going to be steady Eddie throughout the year.
Yeah, it's hard to, keep that high pace up. I mean, quarterback sacks, especially. I think that Jaguar Davis might have his 1 or 2 a game. And by the end of the season, it's going to be pretty tight.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to tip our hand here a little bit. We got to talk about special teams, but we're going to combine this with our Podsky Player of the Week. So I think we've just kind of told everyone who that person's going to be this week. Mike, why don't you take it from here?
Frankie Williams, he's been great all season long. He hasn't got the award yet, and this week it's his turn. He had 3 punt returns for 95 yards. That's an average of 31.7, a long of 57. The kickoff returns, 4 of them for 157 yards, an average of 39.2, a long of 108, and a touchdown. And then there was that touchdown that was called back on the illegal block. They never showed the replay on TSN, so I don't know if that was a real illegal block or a phantom call. But either way, the guy just gave us tremendous field position all game long. So for that reason, Frankie Williams is the Podsky Player of the Week.
Yeah, over 200 return yards. He had the kickoff return touchdown that I feel kind of kept the Ticats in this game. Like, that's when they started to get a little bit stagnant. Then he takes it back and they retake the lead. And I think the thing that we have to remember is that his last return, that I think you've mentioned, it was 57 yards, his long. That was on, 90 seconds left in the game to set the Ticats up for their final drive, which ended up resulting in the game-winning touchdown. Like, special teams has been a huge factor for this team this year, whether it's been punt coverage, whether it's been punt placement from Liam Hirilahu. But the return game has been tremendous. Frankie Williams has been tremendous all season. He was excellent against the BC Lions, and I think a very deserving first-time Podsky Player of the Week.
Yeah, and an important player on defense as well. So
yeah, choking out Daron Carter, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that for a second. Yeah, that was a very... That was a Bozo-ish move. You can't be doing that. But other than that, the return game, he's been amazing.
I mean, I agree you can't be doing that, but let's go look at Daron Carter's numbers in this one. 2 catches for 17 yards.
Yeah, I mean, he shut him down pretty good. Daron Carter hasn't been exactly lighting the world on fire in BC. I thought he'd come into BC with a quarterback like Mike Riley. It just doesn't seem like he's been utilized at all. Like, from the games I've watched, Mike Riley really isn't looking his way. So I can understand why Frankie would get so upset with him. I'm sure Daron Carter says a lot of things on the field, but yeah, he can't be choking out players like
that. And he was fine for it, and that's I think that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's to be expected. But I just thought it was funny. 2-hand grabbing him by the throat, man. I don't know. I love Daron Carter, so I'm sure he was jaw-jacking, but it's still pretty funny. Weekly news, Mike. Let's talk about some Ticats news. Just hot off the presses today, actually. Jamal Westerman, we found out, is done for the season with a torn triceps. This comes after his season was ended last year with a ruptured Achilles tendon. All in all, he's played 10 games for the Ticats, which was a number – or 8 games, I mean. Sorry, not 10 games. 8 games with the Ticats, which was a number that – like, shocked me that was that high, to be perfectly honest. But he obviously came over in the trade for Johnny Manziel. And if we look at this trade, at the end of the day, Man, what kind of a nothing trade this ended up being. Like, we were so excited when it happened. Manziel goes to Montreal, and everyone thinks he's going to be the next big thing. Goes with him Tony Washington, and I think it was Landon Rice. And back to the Ticats came Jamal Westerman, a former All-Star, Chris Williams, a former All-Star, and a pair of first-round picks. And Williams is out of the league after he had his ruptured Achilles a year ago. And looks like Westerman, he's 34 years old, Mike. I don't know if we've seen the last of him play in the CFL. I think it's entirely possible. And all that's left is two first-round picks from that trade. Now, granted, Ticats have done very well with their draft picks recently, especially their higher draft picks. Mark Chapman not included. So that's not, it's not an insignificant haul, but man, we were so excited to watch these players play, and we got maybe what, a total of 10 games, 11 games out of the two of them in Ticat uniform, and kind of sucks.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. You know, two tremendous players in their prime. You know, Chris Williams, we all know about his time at Hamilton. He was one of the most exciting players I've ever seen in Ticat uniform, and I was really excited to see what he could do again, especially in a, you know, June Jones offense. And I think he was just starting to show, you know, himself getting comfortable. And then unfortunately he gets injured. You know, they didn't contribute to the team as much as I thought they would, obviously. But at the end of the day, I'd say it's still a good trade because Johnny Manziel's obviously not in the league anymore. And we got two first round draft picks. Obviously the one didn't work out, but, you know, I'll take one first-round draft pick for Johnny Manziel, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and, like, basically the trade is two first-round picks for Tony Washington. And
yeah.
I like Tony Washington. I think he's a hell of an offensive lineman. No one's trading two first-round picks for an American offensive lineman. So, I mean, at the end of the day, if that's what the trade ends up being, that's what Montreal gets out of it long-term is Tony Washington.
Landon Rice is obviously a depth guy on the offensive line.
Journeyman. So. And, yeah. So, I mean, if that's the trade... I mean, I'll take it. The other piece of news for the Ticats is Emmanuel Davis spent 5 years with the Ticats, signed a one-day contract with the team to officially retire from the CFL. Didn't have a very long career, like I said, 5 years with the team, but he had some pretty high highs. And I'd like to talk about, Mike, use this to first offer congratulations on a wonderful career, which went out with a Grey Cup ring last year with the Calgary Stampeders. So we got a chance to win a championship, which is nice. And, you know, had a pretty good career. So best of luck in what he decides to do in the future. But I think what I'll always remember about Emmanuel Davis is that one game he had, which I believe was on his birthday. He had two interceptions. I think it was against Winnipeg. And I'm sure our buddy Joe Pritchard at USFL Tecmo on Twitter, host of the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast, I'm sure he will remember this. And if I'm right, he will say this. It was the game he came to in 2015 in Hamilton where I met him for the first time. I believe that's the game where Emmanuel Davis had two interceptions, including a pick six at the end of the game. Joe, if you're listening, you're out there, remind me if I'm correct. I know you remember this like it was yesterday. My memory as I get older is a little fuzzier. But that's kind of my standout memory. I remember he had that, like, he was kind of like in and out of the lineup, and then he got in there and had that year. I'm pretty sure it was 2015. Was just awesome. I think he became an East All-Star that year. And it's a shame. There's a lot of guys out there that I wish would have won championships with the Ticats, so it's a shame that Davis didn't get a chance to get a ring here in Hamilton. But he got his ring with Calgary. But, yeah, that two-interception day is going to be the thing that I always remember about Emmanuel Davis.
Yeah, I do recall that as well. And, you know, other than that, nothing really – no particular game sticks out. But I just remember him being, you know, our best DB for a couple years. He was the best player on that defense for two or three years, and you know, that's how I remember him. He was tremendous. So congrats to him on a great career, and you know, it's too bad he didn't stick it out the whole way with the Ticats, but I'm glad that he got a championship with the Stampeders, and I'm happy that he signed the one-day contract with our team.
All right, let's talk about the games from last week. As we record this, we're about 10 minutes from kickoff from week 10 of the CFL season. But let's talk about week 9 here real quick, Mike. First game of the week was a pretty good one between Winnipeg and Calgary, 26-24 final in favor of the Bombers. I know the Riders are kind of lurking there at 5-3, winning 4 in a row, and Edmonton's sitting there at 5-3 as well. And we'll talk about Edmonton in a couple of minutes, but... Man, this season in the West, to me, is just – it feels like we're just playing out the string here until we get to that inevitable Winnipeg-Calgary matchup in the West Final, no?
Maybe, maybe. They are obviously the two best teams right now in the West, but, you know, the Winnipeg offense has been struggling lately. Matt Nichols has not been playing well. I think they really got to lean on Andrew Harris in that run game until Nichols gets out of this funk. But yeah, I could see Calgary and Winnipeg, but I could also see, you know, a team like Edmonton. If their defense has been really good, a guy like Philip Lawley running that defense, I like him a lot. If their offense gets clicking, you know, I could see them making a push as well. So I'm with you, Calgary and Winnipeg, probably going to be in the West Final, but you never know what could happen.
Yeah, not ready to call it quite yet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yes.
All right, Mike, let's talk weather. And we're going over to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders beating the Montreal Alouettes 17-10 with about, what, 3 minutes left in the third quarter. The game was called due to lightning. This sparked a lot of controversy and a lot of chatter over the weekend of, was this the right call? Is this the right thing to do? And basically what we learned is that after the 7.5 minute mark of the third quarter, if there is a weather delay that lasts longer than an hour, the game will be called and that will be it. If it occurs at any point before that, they have the right to wait up until 3 hours before they will call the game. How do you feel about this policy, Mike? Because obviously this sparked a lot of debate online this week.
Well, I had no idea this happened until like 2 days after, because
really?
I left early to go to the Edmonton game, and I don't know. I guess I didn't really look around the next day. And,
blissfully unaware.
Yeah, blissfully unaware. And listen, it sucks. I don't like it at all. I mean, Saskatchewan is only up by a touchdown. You know, Montreal, I don't know if Pipkin got hurt, but I know that Schlitz was playing, so maybe it would have been tough, but man, yeah, you don't want to see that game ending with still a quarter plus left. They got to change that policy, you'd think. I mean, only an hour, that doesn't seem like enough time to award a team 2 points. Yeah, I don't like it one bit.
Yeah, and like, look, if the Ticats game would have ended at the similar time, they would have lost. Mm-hmm. And we saw what happened. So it's a CFL, man. This league trumpets itself as anything can happen. No lead is safe, yada, yada, yada. And then you call a game with like 20 minutes left. Like that just, I don't know, man, that seems wrong to me. I understand it from a player safety perspective and all that stuff. But I don't know, something about this doesn't sit right with me. I don't know what the solution is because no. Yeah, I've sat through a weather delay at Tim Hortons Field at Labor Day 2017, and it sucked. Staying and waiting for that game to be played, and obviously
sucks for
sucks for everybody. But you know what else sucks for fans? Paying full ticket price to go watch a game that ends after three quarters, not even three quarters. Like that's and now are the Owls on the hook? Because I saw a tweet from the Montreal Alouettes Twitter account that said they're going to do something for the people who paid for a ticket there. Like, what about the people like, and yeah, it's a Riders game. So a lot of Riders fans travel. What about those people that won't get an opportunity to get, you know what I mean? Like no one looks good in this. I don't think I understand there needs to be some sort of hard and fast rule, but I think there needs to be some malleability to this. Cause like you look at the, like lightning strikes and now that kicks a clock off of 15 minutes. So if you're saying you can't, if there's lightning strike, you have to wait at least 15 minutes before you resume play. Okay, well now you're down to 45 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It just wins and losses and all that. Yeah, I don't like the idea that the Riders got 2 points out of this when the game was very much still in the balance. And you know what? Saskatchewan still very well may have won this game. But yeah, this just doesn't sit right with me. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you fix this or what you do, but the idea that it's 60 minutes and then it's, and I don't know, it seems too rigid to me.
Yeah, and it could happen multiple times in a year. I mean, you're handing out 2 points, which could be the difference between making the playoffs and not, and that's a huge deal to the players because you get that playoff money, right? I mean, it's a huge deal to the players and their families, so I'm with you. I have no idea what the solution is. Do you make it 2 hours? Do you make it 3 hours? But, you know, games just can't be ending like this with with 18 minutes left to go. It just doesn't seem right at all.
Yeah, do you start and play it again? Like, do you pick it up the next day?
That's an option.
You know what I mean? Like, and forget just the players. What if Montreal misses the playoffs by 2 points or one point? Let's say what they missed in the unlikely event there's a tie sometime this season. Who knows if they – like, now you have this asterisk next to the Owls going, okay, well, they missed the playoffs, but would they have come back and beat the Riders? Like, you don't know. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It just – there has to be a better way is basically what I boil this down to. And the idea that this game was over – and it's a seven-point game. If this was 37-10 Saskatchewan, call it. You know what I mean? Yes, there's the possibility that they could score four touchdowns in the last 18 minutes of play, and it would have been one of the best games. If the game is that at a hand, yeah, I don't think that there'd be as much debate. But 17-10, one-score game in the CFL with 18 minutes left, there could have been nine different lead changes after this.
And I know it's not very plausible, but what if this happens in a playoff game? Like, are you calling the game, like,
could you imagine?
Yeah, I know, and I know it's going to be November, and you're probably not likely going to get lightning storms or thunderstorms or whatever. But yeah, I mean, obviously they have to get together again and figure this out, because we can't have games ending like this.
Okay, the last game of the week, I guess you were at it, Edmonton and Ottawa. Edmonton wins 16-12, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't see a lot of this game, mostly because I fell asleep. It was a late game for me. But my question to you, Mike, coming out of this one is, are Edmonton as good as their 5-3 record says? And this is why I ask. Their five wins, pardon me, have come over Montreal, two against BC, Toronto, and Ottawa. Those teams have a combined record of 8-22. Their three losses were to Winnipeg, also to Montreal, and to Calgary. Their combined record, 14-9. Edmonton is really starting to remind me of the Ticats from last year. Do you remember everyone's sort of knock on the Ticats was they were beating the crappy teams, but they couldn't beat the good teams? You look at Edmonton right now, and that seems to be the case. BC has one win. Toronto has one win. Ottawa has, what, three wins? They're beating up on kind of the lesser lights of the league right now and kind of struggling against the top teams. Now, obviously, 5-3 is still a wonderful record. It's one game out of first place. Feels like a bit of a mirage to me, and maybe come playoff time, this Edmonton team won't be as juggernauty. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know. What do you think? You've seen them up close and personal more than I have, so you might have a better say on this than I will.
They're beating, crappy teams, unquote unquote, but they're not playing well against these teams either, you know, like, especially offensively. Defensively, I think they've been playing really well, but they're winning games against poor teams and they're not putting up a lot of points on the board. Trevor Harris has not looked good. He looked really good at the start of the season, and then he's fallen off the map in the last four or five games, as far as I'm concerned. So I think the Edmonton Eskimos defense is really strong and their offense is a big question mark right now. I think they're a bit of a mirage sitting at 5-3. If they can turn on their offense, get it going again, I think they'll be all right.
Didn't Ottawa have like three shots from like the 10-yard line to win this game?
I think so. And then they
just didn't throw it to Brad Sinopoli.
Yeah, they're pretty incompetent too on offense.
But you know what I mean? Like, they barely beat Montreal in week one. Like, that was when Antonio Pippen got hurt and Vernon Adams came in, and I think they won by one score. They barely beat Ottawa in this one, and I believe they were losing late into the game, if I'm not mistaken. And the Red Blacks had a chance to win this one. So it's like, look, 5-3 is 5-3, and if the Ticats were playing like this and they had a winning record, I wouldn't care. But it makes me kind of wonder if over the course of the season, if Edmonton's not more – what are they going to look like when they got to play Calgary again? And what are they going to look like when they finally got to play the Riders? And what are they going to look like when they got to play the Ticats? Like, I don't know. It seems like Edmonton might end up the season with a good record, but then get like throttled in a playoff game, you know?
Yeah, we're going to see their real identity over the next couple of weeks. You know, the Labor Day matchup is coming up, and then the rematch here in Edmonton, and Yeah, we're going to see how good a team they are down the stretch.
All right, let's talk this week's upcoming Ticats game, Mike. It is the Ticats at the Red Blacks. And I want to start by saying I am so disappointed in Red Blacks fans this week. I have not gotten one chirp all week. Am I losing my touch, or are they? Is it just because Ottawa sucks that they're afraid to talk smack?
Well, I think it might be that they suck, and it might be that they're just not going to feed you anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I know they've learned their lesson. They're just not going to feed the troll anymore. And but we'll see. I'm sure if Ottawa starts winning again, you'll hear plenty from Red Black Nation.
I'm wondering if it's Slapdick Nation, Mike. Come on, get it right. Wonder if I'll hear from them if Ottawa wins this game. I feel like my mentions might be a little more active if Hamilton finds a way to lose this game. But let's talk about it, Mike. 4 p.m. on Saturday from TD Place in Ottawa. Our 6-2 Hamilton Tiger Cats take on the 3-5 Ottawa Red Blacks. We talked a little bit about Ottawa when we were talking about last week's game. They're a bit of a mess right now, I think. I think this is one of those games that they probably need to win if they're to have any realistic chance of challenging the Ticats for first in the East. I know it's really early in the season, but Hamilton goes to 7-2 and Ottawa slips to 3-6. It's, I don't know, it would be a tough hill to climb even over the rest of the season to get in first place. And our Ticats, man, over the next 3 weeks, they have a real chance, I think, to put some distance between themselves and the rest of the division. They got Ottawa this week. They followed up with a game at BC. And then it's Labor Day versus Toronto. You win those all, you're sitting at 9-2 heading into the second half of the season and Hamilton's second bye. And I think you look at that, you basically say they've ostensibly clinched a playoff berth and maybe even the division title. And, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm being facetious, but the Ticats have a real chance here, I think, to put kind of a death grip on the East starting this Saturday in Ottawa. What do you think?
Yeah, if you look at this game, obviously they would be a huge win for them, and they'd jump up in the standings, putting separation. But listen, I was worried about the game last week against BC. I'm not worried about this one.
Kiss of death.
That means they'll probably friggin' lose. But like, you look at these teams, and Hamilton's just so much better. The BC game. Yes, their record is really poor, but they do have a lot of talent on offense, as we saw with guys like Mike Riley and Brian Burnham and John White. I just don't see the same talent on the Ottawa team at all. You know, they got a guy like Dominic Davis, who's a young quarterback. Maybe there's some potential there. He's not Mike Riley. The receiving core is all right. You know, they got a guy like Dominic Rhymes, and you know, Brad Sinopoli's still there, but I am not feeling threatened at all by this Ottawa team. Compare the offenses, total yards per game, Hamilton's up, passing yards per game, Hamilton wins, rushing, Ottawa has a slight advantage. Same with defense. They're going to crush Ottawa. So I'm not worried. How do you feel about this game, Josh?
My only concern in this, Mike, is something we talked about with this past game. It's the run defense. John Crockett, I think, is one of those guys that people don't talk about for Ottawa. Like, I mean, Ottawa fans are talking about him, and he's starting to get a little bit of a name for himself, but he had a pretty good preseason game that I saw when they played the Ticats. He's had some pretty good runs so far once he's replaced Moses Madu. He's a good tailback, and if the Ticats can't stop the run, I think they could be in trouble. But no, you look across the board at both these teams, and you look at position by position, and there really isn't anywhere where you would say Ottawa has a significant advantage, if an advantage at all. Maybe place kicker, because that kicker in Ottawa, Ward, doesn't miss. I mean, but if they're relying on him to score them a bunch of points, I think the Ticats can match threes with sevens. So, I mean, maybe you look at quarterbacks and you go, well, Dominic Davis is a bit more experienced than Dane Evans, but, I mean, I've never been really high on Dominic Davis. I think the more he proves that he's – you know, kind of Stephen Giles 2.0 in a way. Like, he's fine, but he's never going to be a guy that can take command of a team. You look at Dane Evans, and I think each week he's gotten better. So, I don't know. I hesitate to say that I'm not worried, just because I think it's in our nature as Ticat fans to always be a tad bit pessimistic. I'm not used to being 6-2. I don't know about you, but this is uncharted territory kind of for us, especially doing the pod. Like, I know we always bring it up 2015, but I don't know. This is this feels like a different team. Like, that team felt like a juggernaut. This team feels like a team that's just finding the ways to win, as we said earlier. It still feels weird that the Ticats are at 6 wins 8 games into the year. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just that inherent. Maybe we have to get a couple of years of this, like, 10, 11, 12 win stuff before we start feeling really comfortable in games like this. But, I mean, by no metric would you say that Ottawa should win this game. The only thing in their advantage is that they're playing at home. But they're not a good home team. I think they're 1-3 at home this year, and the Ticats aren't a great road team. I believe they're 1-2 on the road this year, but I mean, they played in Regina, which is a tough place to win. They played in Montreal, and you know, that came a week after they had blown out the Owls. So, you know, and Montreal, as we've seen, has kind of turned things around a little bit. So they're a competitive team now. So that was never should have been a gimme. But I mean, no, is there really a reason? Like I said, maybe the run defense. But other than that, is there really a reason to really feel worried in this one? I don't think so.
No, the only thing I could see is if, you know, Great Dane, Mr. Dane Evans, takes a big step back and throws a couple of interceptions, or, you know, we take as many penalties as we did in the last game, that might, you know, make things closer than they should be. But other than that, if they can, you know, limit the turnovers or have no turnovers at all and limit the penalties, we should be laughing into the win column in this one and sitting at a beautiful, you know, unlikely 7-2.
Yeah, like, look, it's a CFL. Anything can happen. No one would have called Toronto beating Winnipeg a couple weeks back. And
I did.
What?
I actually bet on them. I did, yeah.
You bet on the Argos? How much did you win?
I bet on the Argos that week, but I didn't cash in because they didn't win by 4 points.
Well, good for you, but then.
Yeah, I went out on a limb. And you know what? I can see Toronto beating Edmonton this week as well. We're getting off topic.
We're not a gambling podcast. We're not a couple of D-gens spending all our money on gambling. But, hey, good for you. I mean, good for you for calling that Argos win. But, yeah, like I said, anything can happen in the CFL. But, look, I know when we get like this and we start talking about how good we think the team is, there's people who listen to the show that aren't Ticats fans that start calling us arrogant. We're cocky. Look, man, take away the team names. It's a 6-2 team playing a 3-5 team. Who the hell do you think would be the favorites? Who the hell do you think we'd sit here and say is probably going to win? I mean, come on. Like, we've seen
non-Ticats play. Fans. I mean, even Red Black fans have to admit that, you know, they're the underdog.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You'd have to be the most delusional of homers to think that Ottawa is not the significant underdog heading into this game. If that means anything come the end of the game, who knows? But right now, as we're sitting here, a couple of days from kickoff, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Ticats are going to lose this game because I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're the better team. I think the record shows that. I think the season has borne that out. I think it will continue to. I think they go into TD Place and they get the W.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally agreement with you. I don't foresee any way they lose this game, really.
All right, Mike. So that was Pod's QE for this week. Our 150th episode, like you said at the top of the show, here's to 150 more. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.